Bibles to Genesis 32. We'll be there in just a moment. And that song that Jesse just led is perfect for what we're going to be talking about in this lesson, about seeing Jesus face to face and having him wrap us up in his gentle, loving arms, things like that. Very beautiful song. This last Friday, Fridays are the day that I try to take off during the week. And so Samantha and I, what we like to try to do on Friday mornings is try to go to like a coffee shop that maybe we don't go to very often, or maybe a new one that we haven't tried before. And so there's a new one in La Mesa called Public Square Coffee. So we went there this Friday morning. And when we were there, I was eating my really good scone and drinking my really good coffee and stuff. And Asher started playing with a little girl that was 17 months old. And so we started talking to the parents, and we started, like, you know, finding out a little bit about what they're all about, what they believe in, and things like that. And they're actually a young Jewish couple. And so I asked them, I said, well, is this Passover weekend for you guys? And they said, yeah, and we have our meals and everything like that. We celebrate the Passover. And so I asked them, do you guys celebrate this still in anticipation of a Messiah to come? And they said, not really anymore. It's just more of like a tradition for us. Which it's just interesting that we're here gathered together, remembering the fact that Jesus has risen from the dead. There's many people today that are celebrating what man has called Easter. You can't really find that in the Bible necessarily, unless you have the King James translation. But like Alan said for the Lord's Supper, we celebrate the fact that Jesus rose from the dead every first day of the week. And what I actually wanted to do for a sermon this morning is I wanted to explain that Easter, or the fact that Jesus rose from the dead, is not something that we simply celebrate. It's something that's supposed to change the way that we live every day. And I was going to show different passages in the Bible that show how his resurrection impacts us today. But I think because of my head cold that I've had all week, I just was not able to put that together like I wanted to. So on my computer, I have like a folder of sermon ideas that I would like to do eventually. And since I start those folders or those files, I'm always thinking about different texts that I want to preach. So I decided to go ahead and do this lesson from Genesis 32, where Jacob wrestles an angel. And maybe you'll get that sermon on the resurrection sometime later. But one of the things that I'm impressed with in Scripture is that God is so patient with sinners, and that God will take people who are self-reliant, and he'll take people that don't fully submit to him, and he'll help them get to a point out of his love where they eventually get to that point where they do trust him all the more, like we ought to. I'm going to go ahead and read this text. This is Genesis 32, verses 22 to 32. And after I read this, we'll kind of explain some of the background behind it, because it seems like a really strange kind of passage. So Genesis 32, verses 22 to 32. The same night he arose, that's Jacob, and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and set them across the stream and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. And when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of that place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen the face of God, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose up upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore to this day the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the hip of Jacob's, the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. As we look at a passage like this, we might find it somewhat ironic that this is a story of Jacob wrestling this man, and we'll talk more about who he's wrestling in just a moment. But he's wrestling this guy, And it's ironic because we have to wrestle with what this text means. I mean, you look at this text, you have any idea why this is here? Why God has given us this passage? You know, maybe one way to answer that question is to think about the original audience of the book of Genesis. You'll recall that the book of Genesis was written to the nation of Israel as they were leaving Egypt and they were wandering in the wilderness, anticipating that they would be in the promised land. So for this original audience, this story would show some things of their origins. By the way, you go ahead and read through the whole book of Genesis, and there'll be stories and it'll say, this is why this place is named that, or this, it shows you the origins that would have pertained to the Israelites. So for example, in this story, in verse 30, you've got this location called Peniel. And this is the east side of the Jordan River, north of the Dead Sea. And so Jacob is not quite in the promised land. He would need to cross the Jordan River in order to be there. And this place, right before you'd enter the promised land, is called Peniel. Now, that seems like a weak reason why this story is given, because Peniel is like not ever mentioned in the Bible again. But maybe that would be something that the Israelites would have wanted to know. Maybe this explains, like verse 32 says, why the Israelites did not eat the meat from the hip socket, or the sinew from the hip socket. I guess according to this passage, we don't read about this in Leviticus or the law books, that whenever the Israelites would eat, this would be one of the things that they would abstain from. And so if you're an Israelite, I guess this story would help you realize that when the holy and perfect God touched a hip socket, that was just a message for you that you didn't eat the sinew from the hip socket ever, I guess. But I think there's something more to it than just that. Look at verse 28. The first time that the word Israel is used in the Bible is in verse 28. This word is going to be used 2,221 more times in the Bible. And even today, people will talk about the nation of Israel. People will talk about the Israelite nation. And this is the story that explains how Israel, who had just left Egypt, got their name to begin with. And so maybe that would be one of the things that would be helpful in understanding the purpose of this story. But try to think about this. Jacob's life up to this point. This moment in Jacob's life is kind of like the climax of his life. This is a very important moment that has been led up to with all the events before this. Jacob's name means he takes by the heel, or he cheats, or heel catcher. Can you imagine having that be your name? So what's your name? Well, I'm a cheater. I'm a heel grabber. And the idea is that I'm always trying to wrestle things from people. I'm basing all of my relationships based on transaction. What can I get from you? That's Jacob. He's a manipulating, deceiver kind of guy. By the way, go back to Genesis chapter 25. In Genesis 25, he's got a twin brother named Esau. And just look at the beginning of chapter 25, verse 22. It says, the children struggled within her. That would be Rebekah. Samantha is like 32 weeks, 33 weeks pregnant right now, and Abigail is moving like crazy. I can't imagine having twins in Samantha's belly and then watching them like struggle and seeing like little feet come out and things like that, like across the skin and everything like that. But what's going on in Rebecca's womb is that these twins are fighting and they're struggling with each other. Does that sound like a Jacob to you? Somebody who's grabbing somebody by the heel, even in the womb. Skip down a couple verses and look at verses 25 and 26. This is when they're actually born. The first came out red, all of his body like a hairy cloak, so that they called his name Esau. He looked like Elmo, I guess. Verse 26. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. Try to imagine this. This is like the birth scene. Like they're at the hospital or whatever they had back then. And here comes the babies. The first one that comes out is Esau. But who's striving and fighting and trying to grapple with his brother to have the firstborn privileges? It seems like even from birth, you've got Jacob trying to grab the heel of his brother so that he can be the firstborn. Can you imagine what it would have been like for those two brothers as they were growing up? And by the way, before these kids were born, God had promised Isaac and Rebekah that the older will serve the younger. That the younger will be the one with the privileges. God has decreed that that's true about Jacob. But all of Jacob's life, he's trying to grab things that God has already promised that you're going to have. So in this same chapter, in Genesis chapter 25, you've got this moment when they've gotten older, and Jacob is kind of like the kid that stays at home and he cooks meals and all that kind of thing. But then his brother is like the manly guy that drives a pickup truck and he goes out and hunts and everything like that. Like, that's who Esau is. And there's this time where Esau's gone out hunting and he hasn't got anything, but then his brother's at home and he's cooking the stew and his brother Esau thinks he's going to die. So he's willing to trade his birthright for the bowl of soup. Does that sound like a Jacob to you? Jacob is taking every opportunity he can to grapple things out of the hands of other people. You ever known somebody like that? In chapter 27 of Genesis, Isaac is, he's lost his eyesight, basically. And so Isaac wants to bless his son Esau. He says, go out and get me the best game that you can go find, and I will bless you with all of these nice things that the fathers would give their children. And so what Jacob does is he dresses up as a really hairy dude, and then he goes ahead and takes his brother's blessing. Go over to Genesis 27, verse 41. Look at Genesis 27, verse 41. After his brother had stolen his birthright and his blessing, it says, now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching, then I will kill my brother Jacob. Can you imagine that? You're Esau, and you've like put up with your brother for I don't know how many years, but he's just taken things from you and taken things from you and taken things from you. And eventually you get to the point where you say, I'm going to kill him. And so what Jacob does is he flees to this man named Laban for 20, 21 years. And he meets a man named Laban who tries to take things from Jacob. So you've got two deceivers that are battling with each other. But eventually, after 20 years of working with this guy, Jacob is finally wrestling himself away from this man. And he's coming back to where his brother is. And many years have transpired at this point. But look at Genesis 32. Look at verse 6. In Genesis 32, verse 6, it says, Jacob sends messengers ahead of him to let his brother Esau know that he's coming back to his territory. And it says, and the messengers returned to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him. Can you imagine that? I haven't seen my brother for like 20 years. The last time I saw him, he wanted to kill me. And hey, I just want to send some messengers out saying, hey, I'm coming back. And now his brother is bringing 400 men. Do you think that's a welcoming crew? We just want to give you a bunch of high fives and hugs. If you're Jacob, you're thinking, this guy hasn't forgotten about what I did to him, and he's going to kill me. And what we're looking at with Jacob wrestling the angel is what happens the night before he meets his brother. That's what we see going on here. Now, in this text that I read earlier, if you look at verse 24, it says that Jacob is wrestling a man. If you look at verse 30, Jacob himself says that I've seen God face to face. So even though he's wrestling a man, this man somehow represented God. But the book of Hosea is like the only other passage in the Bible that explicitly mentions this story. Hosea 12, verses 2 through 4 says this. The Lord has an indictment against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. He will repay him according to his deeds. He's referring to the nation that came from him. Verse 3, in the womb he took his brother by the heel, and in his manhood he strove with God. He strove with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. This is a story where, according to Hosea, Jacob is wrestling with an angel, and it's in this moment that this man Jacob weeps and he seeks God's favor. Before he's done things with his own way of thinking, before he's been a manipulator and a deceiver, but now it's in this moment that evidently he starts to seek the favor of God. Now, how does all this work? Try to imagine what happens here. In this scene, Jacob takes his family, his two wives, his female servants, his 11 children, and they cross the ford of the Jabbok River. Now, a ford is like the part of the river that's shallow enough so that you can wade across, so your ankles might get wet, but you're not going to drown there. And so Jacob, like, brings all of his family to one side of it, and it's not completely clear to me how all of this works, but evidently he goes back to the other side, and he's all by himself with his family on the other side. And he knows that he's going to be meeting his angry brother the next day. And I don't know why he's all by himself on the other side. Maybe he was going to be praying to God and this situation had driven him to his knees. Maybe he was wanting to get emotionally prepared for it. But try to imagine that you've got Jacob and he's all alone in this area by himself. And then suddenly, I don't know how this would have looked, but like this man comes out of the bushes or something. And he just comes right up behind Jacob and he puts him in an arm bar or something like that. And what's all happening here is actually a play on words. The word Jacob, again, has the idea of like grappling or taking something. So Jacob is being Jacobed by the Jabbok. That's what's happening here. Like by the way, Hebrew, they like to do a lot of puns, which is maybe one reason why I should learn Hebrew because I like to do puns. But you've got Jacob Jacobing at the Jabbok. Try to imagine what this would have been like. Like, he's wrestling with him. He doesn't know who this guy is. It's dark. His family's on the other side of the river. And when I was in high school, I tried doing wrestling for a few weeks, and it's one of the most strenuous activities that you can do, I think. And based on what we can tell, Jacob is like 97 years old at this point. A 97-year-old dude is wrestling this angel. Now, oftentimes when we think of strong people in the Bible, we think of Samson. But sometimes maybe we should think about Jacob. There's other things that he did that show that he had strength earlier in this book. But try to imagine that he's wrestling for 4 to 6 hours. I don't know how long it was. But after he's been wrestling for a while, notice what the angel does in verse 25. The angel just touches the hip of Jacob. It doesn't say that he grabbed the hip. It doesn't say that he smashed it with a hammer. The Hebrew word for touch just means like a soft touch on the hip. And as soon as his hip gets touched, what happens to Jacob? His whole hip gets dislocated. Can you imagine what that would have sounded like? Now, Hosea told us that Jacob was weeping when that happened. Can you imagine the moaning and the crying that Jacob would have been doing after that? Isn't it interesting that after, I don't know, let's say 4 hours of wrestling, it seems like Jacob is prevailing. It seems like he's the stronger one, or at least it's a pretty even match right now. But if all this guy has to do is touch the hip socket and there's a dislocation, who's the one who had power all along? Clearly the angel just wasn't flexing all of his muscles during that whole wrestling match, but when he touches the hip, that shows Jacob that this guy is extremely strong. But even in this moment, Jacob is still holding on to the man. And the man says, Jacob, let me go. And what Jacob says after that, imagine him as he's weeping and crying because of the dislocated hip. He says to this angel, I will not let you go unless you bless me. I wonder how long it took him to get those words out with all of the crying that he was doing. I wonder what it sounded like. But Jacob's telling this guy, there's no way I'm going to let you go. I know that you have more power than me, which is why I need a blessing from you. And so the angel says, what's your name? Isn't this an odd question? I mean, if the angel is from God, if the man is from God, doesn't he already know what his name is? Well, yeah, he does. But for him to be asked, what's your name? If his name means deceiver and heel grabber and things like that, for him to say, my name is Jacob, is a confession of his character. What's your name? Who have you been all your life? I'm a deceiver. I'm a liar. That's who I've been my whole life. When he asks him what his name is, he's asking for a confession of who have you been your whole life. And it's in this moment that he's going to be given a new name, Israel. And we'll talk about what that means in just a moment. But Jacob tries to ask the angel the name. He says to this angel, well, what's your name then? I've been renamed Israel. What's your name? Maybe this is Jacob's last attempt to try to have control over this situation. I don't know exactly why he asks that, but the angel's not going to satisfy all of his curiosities. And so he goes away from that situation. And Jacob stands up, and he's got a limp now because of what happened to his hip. And he names this place Peniel because this is where I've seen God face to face. This was a moment in my life that transformed me. I like how verse 31 like pictures this as like a movie scene almost. In verse 31, you've got Jacob and he's limping and the sun is rising up on him. Can you imagine what that would have looked like? By the way, doesn't this seem like poor timing for a limp? I mean, you're about to meet your brother. Who, last time you knew of him, he wanted to kill you. Now he's coming with 400 guys, and you think that he still wants to kill you. And God has just given you like a limp, and you can't evade your brother now. Seems like a terrible timing for a limp. Now, we're not going to really deal with this in this lesson, but in chapter 33, when he finally meets his brother, they embrace each other. And it's not at all what Jacob thought was going to happen. So what do we do with a story like this? What's the point of something like this? I think what we have going on in this story is it's teaching us things about wrestling that all of us have to wrestle with. I think in this story, we first of all see that there's different types of wrestling. You could say that everybody in the world is a wrestler of some kind. And I think Jacob, throughout his life, embodies both kinds of wrestling that people can engage in. For example, when Jacob is first of all, wrestling with the angel. It's not like they're doing a duet where they're like their dance moves are working together, like they're fighting each other. And so what Jacob is doing initially in this wrestling match is he's wrestling against the man, which pictures what his whole life has been. He's a manipulator. He's a deceiver. He's going to take things into his own matter. He's not going to pray to God. He's not going to trust in the Lord. I'm going to be fighting against what God says every point that I can. But look what happens around verses 25 and 26. Do you see how the wrestling changes in this? Jacob gets to a point in this wrestling match and in his life, big picture, where he's not fighting against God anymore. He's actually grabbing onto the angel saying, I will not let you go unless you bless me. He's not wrestling against him anymore. He's wrestling for him. Saying, I will not let you go until I get a blessing from you. Try to think about this in your own life. What kind of wrestling are you engaged in? You know, for Jacob, he must have thought that his biggest problem in life was Esau. This brother that wants to kill me, he looks like Elmo, so he scares me. He's just like not a fun guy to be around. He's a really rugged guy with his big truck and everything like that. Are there people in your life that you would consider to be like an Esau to you? And you have to like wrestle them, you have to fight them, or maybe there's circumstances in your life that are really challenging and you think that this is my wrestling match. It's this person. It's this circumstance. You know what might be the case? Is that whatever we're facing that's difficult, if we start to take matters into our own hands and we lie and we steal and we cheat and we slander and we gossip and we do all kinds of things that God didn't say to do, you know who we're really wrestling against? We're wrestling against God. And maybe here's one way that you could test that. Have you ever noticed that when somebody's mean to you, you like vilify the person? How could that person do that? That person's so terrible. But then when you do the same thing to somebody else, you say, well, I was really tired. Or there was extenuating circumstances, or I had a headache. Like, we find all kinds of ways to excuse the things that we've done in the past. Or the things that we're currently doing. And we think it's all justified because this person's a thorn in my side. Because this situation is tough. And really all we're doing is we're wrestling against God. Here's how we test ourselves, though. Are there places in your life where you're justifying sin? Well, you know, I'm just... It just makes sense that I can go ahead and do this. It makes sense that I can have this attitude towards my spouse. It makes sense that I can say these things that aren't true. You're not really wrestling against the person in your life. You're wrestling against God at that point. But then on the other hand, we can be people who wrestle for God, where we say, I know this situation is hard, I know this stuff is challenging, but I will not let you go, God, in the sense that I will not disobey you until you bless me. I'm going to keep it up. I'm going to keep wrestling for you and not against you. What kind of wrestler are you? But notice how we can start to wrestle correctly in this story. How do we start to wrestle correctly? What I think is interesting in this story is that God is the one that dislocates Jacob's hip. Reminds me of Proverbs 27, verse 6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. I think in the context, this is talking about a rebuke. That the person who's really your friend, they're not just going to like always praise you. They're going to actually like say things to you that challenge you. Here it says that, I think this kind of pictures what God did for Jacob. That this crippling thing that he does to him is actually an injury of grace and mercy. Because in this story, Jacob says, I've seen the face of God, but I've been delivered. He realizes that he's in the presence of somebody that could have just completely obliterated him, and he didn't. But Jacob starts to wrestle correctly for God when his hip was dislocated. You know why I think that's significant? Is because when it says that he prevailed against man and God, I used to look at that statement in the story and think, well, does that mean that like Jacob just really outmustered God's strength? What's the idea to that? The reason that Jacob prevailed with God is because this is the moment that he conceded. In verse 28. He prevailed with God because he finally realized that God was more powerful than him. To win is to lose. To be weak is to be strong. It's in this moment in Jacob's life when he stops relying on himself and he realizes that the kind of wrestling he should be doing is with God and for God and not against him. Think about this in your own life. Can we be like Jacob? Are we self-reliant? Are we people who, even though, like Jacob, God has promised us blessings in the future, we're grabbing things and taking things, and we don't fully trust that he's going to do all of that for us, so we have to take it into our own hands? Do you know what God sometimes has to do with people to help them not be so self-reliant and help them wrestle the right way? It's to dislocate the hip. By the way, does the New Testament teach things like this? 2 Corinthians 1, 8 and 9. For we do not want you to be unaware, brothers, of the affliction we experienced in Asia, for we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death, but that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. Paul got to a point in his life where all of these riots in Ephesus, we'd read about that in Acts 19, he thought he was going to die. And in that moment, it felt like he got a dislocated hip. And what did all of that do for him? It caused him to trust more in the Lord and not in himself. Later on in 2 Corinthians, Paul would say this in chapter 12, verses 7 to 9. So to keep me from being conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me. To keep me from becoming conceited or to trust in himself, 3 times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. What's Paul saying here? I was given this thorn in the flesh after I received these great revelations when I went to heaven. And I struggle with pride because of that. Like I struggle with being conceited because of what I saw. So God allowed this thorn in the flesh to come into my life so that I wouldn't trust in myself and that I wouldn't think that I'm such a hot shot. What limps do you have in your life? Maybe your limp that you received that caused you to trust more in God and not in yourself, maybe it was having to leave certain friendships with people. Maybe you had some friends in high school or college or something like that that were bad influences to you. And even to this day, it hurts that you can't be friends with those people, because if you would be, then they would drag you down. Maybe your limp is something that's happened to you in your life, and maybe God didn't send it into your life, but one of the things that you've learned from all of this is that God's grace is sufficient for me. Not having the perfect circumstances, not having everybody like me, not having the perfect bank account, not having whatever, but the thing that I need is God's grace. Sometimes God has to allow our hips to be dislocated before we can start trusting in Him and not everything else around us. But look at this last thing in this story. How do we wrestle correctly? We just talked about that. Wrestling brings a new day. There's three times in this story, verses 24, 26, which isn't on the board, and then verse 31. It's repeated three times in this story that as Jacob was wrestling and as his wrestling was transformed, that the day was transformed along with it. He was wrestling in the darkness, but then the sun came up, because it brought a new day. Why is that repeated and emphasized three times? I think it's to make the point that wrestling the right way brings a new day in our life. And in this story, Jacob's name was changed to Israel. You read through the book of Genesis, and the people that have the authority to name something are the ones that have positions of authority. So God, in Genesis 1, as He's creating everything, calls the light day and the darkness night, so on and so forth. When Adam is created, He names the animals because He has authority over the animals. He names Eve because as the husband, He has authority over the wife, all of those kinds of things. So up to this point in Genesis, you know that when the person changes somebody else's name, the name changer is the one that has authority. So Jacob, in this moment, his name has meant heel grabber. The new name means God prevails. Because now God has prevailed over this man. He's no longer the deceiver that he used to be, but now he's allowed God to prevail over his life, and his life is going to start to look different from here on out. By the way, can you think of other people in the Bible that are given new names? Peter used to be Simon. Peter means rock. God helped him become firm like a rock. The Bible teaches in Revelation that when we get to the new heaven and the new earth, that we're all going to be given new names. We're going to be blessed in that kind of way. But when Jacob wrestled not against God anymore, but for Him, that's when things changed in his life. Try to think about areas that we might wrestle against God and what that might lead to in our life. Think about doctrinal issues. There are some people who will say things like this. Well, I see what the Bible says about X, Y, or Z, and I'm wrestling with it. And really what they mean by that is, I don't like what it says, and I just want you off my back right now, so let's change the subject. If you're really wrestling with something that the Bible teaches, it means that you're not going to be fighting against what God says. You're going to be seeing what it says, and you're going to be striving to understand it for God in His glory. Are there doctrinal things that you need to wrestle with? And if so, it brings a new day. It helps you understand things in ways that you hadn't understood it before. What about life circumstances? Are you grappling with any tough life circumstances right now? Because of your life circumstance, don't allow it to make you wrestle against God, but wrestle for God and be like Jacob and say, I will not let you go, no matter what happens in my life. No matter what hip sockets get dislocated. Here's a third one, though. What about wrestling in prayer? You ever prayed for something again and again and again, and it doesn't seem like there's any answer? Some people would say, I'm done praying about that. Luke 18 says to keep doing it. Keep wrestling with God, not against Him. Maybe the answer to the prayer will be no, like it was with Paul about the thorn in the flesh. Maybe it'll be yes. But continue to wrestle with God and not against Him. And ultimately, we serve a God, Jesus Christ, who when He was in the Garden of Gethsemane, He wrestled not against God, but with God. He did plead with God that if this cup can be removed, please, please have that happen. But if not, Your will be done. We serve a God that has allowed us to see Him face to face in the person of Jesus Christ. A God like that is a God that's worth wrestling for. And if we continue to wrestle against him, if he's got the power to touch somebody's hip socket and dislocate it, what are the worst things that could happen in eternity? If there's anybody here this morning that needs to change their form of wrestling and needs to realize that God's grace reaches us and that his grace is sufficient for us, this is an opportunity to get the help of the congregation here, to get help from God while we stand and while we sing.